From 1 till 4,
Afternoons with Matt Webb. Cambridge
105. So my guest this afternoon is the newly re-elected Cambridge MP, Daniel Zeichner. Thank you very much for joining me on the line this afternoon, Daniel.
It's a pleasure, Matt.
So first of all, I'd just like to get your thoughts on this awful fire at a tower block in West London that's claimed six lives. It's awful news coming out of there today.
It is absolutely dreadful news, and I think anyone listening to the reports and the accounts given by some of the eyewitnesses, our hearts go out to them. An absolutely horrible tragedy, and obviously people will be looking very seriously at how this could have happened.
And if something of this nature happened in Cambridge, are our emergency services equipped to deal with it?
I hope so. I'm pretty sure they are, but it's one of the questions I'll be asking when I have my regular meeting with people. Obviously, some of these buildings, I mean, we don't have any buildings in Cambridge at that kind of height, but it's really important that all the proper fire precautions and safety checks are done regularly. At this point, it's too soon to know what actually caused the problem in this case. But I think people should be assured that our public services are always well organised and ready to help in these situations.
Mm. Also want to get your thoughts on the Guardian article about the CB1 development, where it's claimed it could become a future slum. Now, the claims are highlighted in an architecture and design blog on their website written by former Cambridge University student Oliver Wainwright, who also studied at the Royal College of Art. What do you make of his comments and what he said?
Well, I have to say it echoes many of the conversations I've had with over the last decade. It is absolutely right to say that the promises that were made by the developers at the beginning have not been kept. And, of course, in my time as the MP, I tried hard to persuade the Secretary of State to intervene to save Wilton Terrace, but it does seem that money has been the prime driver, and many of the things that we were promised have not happened. And I think it shows that the planning system is too weak. It favours the developers, and it doesn't act in the interests of local people. The councils do their best, but they don't always have the powers to stop these developers.
Now, you've had a few days to chew over your election victory in Cambridge. Firstly, your thoughts on the way that the city voted.
Well, obviously I was very pleased that people in Cambridge put their trust in me. It was clearly part of a wider movement across the country. We saw a big rise in the turnout, and I think that extra turnout certainly reflected people who wanted a change, who were tired of Theresa May's government, tired of austerity, actually fed up with the way Brexit was being handled. And I think that's all positive. The sadness to me is we still have Theresa May as Prime Minister and we still have a Conservative government. But I think the enthusiasm that we saw really gave me cause for hope and for optimism for the future.
Do you think it was a pointless general election?
Well, I mean, obviously, it didn't have to be called. It was a judgment made by Theresa May. I think, as one of those people who had to vote on it, it was a difficult one because I would always take the opportunity to try and get rid of a Conservative government. But I didn't get a sense from most people that they were enthusiastic about having yet another trip to the polls. It's the sixth election we've done in Cambridge in 25 months, and that's a lot of elections.
But you've achieved a larger mandate from the city than 2015 when you scraped through with 599 votes as a majority. Now it's a 12,000 majority. So from your perspective, surely that must be a good thing.
From my personal perspective, yes, of course. But a huge amount of money spent on an election, a huge amount of uncertainty. And of course, actually now for the country, a government that's pretty much a lame duck government. So from the point of view of the country, I just wish we'd been able to get a few more seats and actually get the change that I think people were voting for and have a Labour government now.
Now, the local manifesto you were elected upon is, in your own words, a manifesto for the many, not the few, which sets out Labour's radical vision for the future for Britain. Do you stand by those remarks?
Yes, I do, because I think there were a whole series of headline policies which I think did attract support from a wide section of the population, and I think it was the manifestos that probably were the turning point in the election, a really rather dour negative offer from the Conservatives and a much more inspiring, positive, hopeful offer from Labour.
But it's interesting because Theresa May was expected to have a landslide and Jeremy Corbyn did pretty well looking at the polls leading up to the general election. Obviously, they did narrow in the last couple of days. Some would say that might have been due to her her policies of removing the triple lock and downgrading it to a double lock on pensions. Do you think that is one of the reasons that swung the vote, a large section of the vote, in Labour's favour?
Well, I think clearly a lot of pensioners weren't very thrilled with that, and they equally were perplexed by her proposals on social care. But I think if you're talking about, you know, asking yourself why did more people vote in Cambridge, I think there's plenty of evidence suggests it was younger people, and I think they were probably inspired by Jeremy Corbyn and Labour's offer rather than reacting to the negativity from the Conservatives. But overall, I think it was about people felt, well, look, we've had 7 or 8 years of austerity now. Is this really the way it's going to be forever? Does it have to be like this? And we showed it doesn't have to be like this. It could be different.
So how do you propose to implement some of the local things that you've outlined in your manifesto? Obviously, when the country is led by a Conservative government, you're going to find it quite difficult to maybe get some of these things through.
Well, that is always a problem if you don't win the election. Actually, given it's a very close, balanced parliament now, it may be possible to extract concessions from the government. And that's what we'd certainly be looking to do. I mean, we still believe that Theresa May should go, and that it's Labour that should form a minority government. And we'll have to see over the next few days how that pans out.
And one of the things you outlined in your manifesto was to reform the legislation on taxis and private hire vehicles to help Cambridge. Is that something that you're still hoping might very much happen in the foreseeable future?
Well, I'm waiting to see whether I will continue in my post as a Shadow Transport Minister, and I very much hope that I do. But if I do, that will be one of my top priorities in the coming period, to put more pressure on the government to get them to move more swiftly, because the whole world has changed with changing technologies, with new apps, with Uber taxis appearing on the streets of Cambridge and many other cities. The regulation is way, way out of date. And the government did promise some years ago to look at the Law Commission's recommendations, but they've done nothing really since. And I hope that the government will respond. If we're lucky enough to come into government, that's something we'll be doing as an urgent priority.
Now, one thing that did stick out for me in your manifesto was a pledge to look after the bee population. Just tell us more about that.
Well, this is partly about the Brexit issue, about what happens if we come out of the European Union, some people would say when, and the environmental protections, particularly around some of the chemicals known as neonicotinoids, which a lot of evidence shows are damaging the bee population. Now, the European Union has rules which allow occasional exemptions, which some farmers in the east of England have applied for, but the government has on some occasions refused those exemptions, others has permitted them. We want to be sure that post-Brexit, our environmental legislation is tough enough to make sure we are able to protect our bee population.
Now, you're being sworn in as an MP in Parliament shortly. Just tell us about what happens, and more importantly, what it was like for you for the first time in 2015.
Well, as with quite a few things in Parliament, it's a ritual. Basically, you queue up according to seniority, which meant that some last time round I was very much towards the end of the queue, because I think it's probably by length of time served and then alphabetically, so I think I really was almost last. This time I go up slightly in the pecking order, but it's the same thing. It is televised for anyone who's got nothing to do this afternoon. But essentially, each person in turn has to swear an oath or affirm an oath and sign the book, which basically says that you will do your best as a Member of Parliament to represent the interests of your constituents, and it does involve swearing allegiance to the monarch.
And when it happened to you in 2015, did you have butterflies when you were being sworn in? Did you feel nervous at all?
No, I don't think I felt nervous at that point, no. I mean, the thing is, it's a bit like a school ceremony, really. I think one gets more nervous when one's actually called to speak for the first time in the chamber, because that's when you're actually doing something rather than just, let's say, standing in a line signing your name. So I don't think there's any need for butterflies this afternoon.
Well, Daniel, it's been fantastic talking to you. Congratulations on your re-election as the MP for Cambridge. We'll have to wait and see how long you'll be MP for, because there are talks of a possible another general election towards the end of this year, the start of next year. I'm sure that's something that you certainly wouldn't be looking forward to.
oh, I love elections, and you learn a lot during them, so you get to see lots of people. I have to say, I think it's more the other way around. Can the good people at Cambridge bear another 4 or 5 weeks of electioneering? But if they're up for it, I'm always up for it.
Daniel Zeichner, thank you very much for talking to me this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.